chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are rest make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness, we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got some very interesting tips for you tonight. These are going to be, we're going to focus in on President Biden's speech on Thursday, which he castigated the mega, Trump people and in a real dangerous way. And we'll explain why he and that happened and describe a little bit after you hear the speech of why it was so dangerous. But first, let's listen to part of that speech. And then I'm going to put up a click off that you can go in to our site, thesecrettruth.com, and listen to the whole speech if you wish to. But this is just a small clip of what he had to say, and he castigated the mega Trump part of the campaign and the ongoing campaign and supporters for Trump. So here we go with that President Biden speech.
But first, we must be honest with each other and with ourselves. Too much of what's happening in our country today is not normal. Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our republic. Now, I want to be very clear up front. Not every Republican, not even the majority of Republicans, are MAGA Republicans. Not every Republican embraces their extreme ideology. I know, because I've been able to work with these mainstream Republicans. But there's no question that the Republican Party today is dominated, driven, and intimidated by Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans. And that is a threat to this country. These are hard things. But I'm an American president, not a president of red America, blue America, but of all America. And I believe it's my duty to level with you, to tell the truth, no matter how difficult, no matter how painful. And here, in my view, is what is true. MAGA Republicans do not respect the Constitution. They do not believe in the rule of law. They do not recognize the will of the people. They refuse to accept the results of a free election. And they're working right now, as I speak, in state after state, to give power to decide elections in America to partisans and cronies, empowering election deniers to undermine democracy itself. MAGA forces are determined to take this country backwards, backwards to an America where there is no right to choose, no right to privacy, no right to contraception, no right to marry who you love. They promote authoritarian leaders, and they fan the flames of political violence that are a threat to our personal rights, to the pursuit of justice, to the rule of law, to the very soul of this country. They look at the mob that stormed the United States Capitol on January 6th, brutally attacking law enforcement, not as insurrectionists, who placed a dagger at the throat of our democracy, but they look at them as patriots, and they see their MAGA failure to stop a peaceful transfer of power after the 2020 election as preparation for the 2022 and 2024 elections. They tried everything last time to nullify the votes of 81 million people. This time, they're determined to succeed in thwarting the will of the people. That's why respected conservatives like Federal Circuit Court Judge Michael Luddig has called Trump and the extreme MAGA Republicans, quote, a clear and present danger to our democracy. But while the threat to American democracy is real, I want to say as clearly as we can, we are not powerless in the face of these threats. We are not bystanders in this ongoing attack on democracy. There are far more Americans from every background and belief who reject the extreme MAGA ideology than those that accept it. And folks, it's within our power, it's in our hands, yours and mine, to stop the assault on American democracy. I believe America is at an inflection point, one of those moments that determine the shape of everything that's to come after. And now, America must choose to move forward or to move backwards. To build a future or obsess about the past, to be a nation of hope and unity and optimism, or a nation of fear, division, and of darkness. MAGA Republicans have made their choice. They embrace anger. They thrive on chaos. They live not in the light of truth, but in the shadow of lies. But together we can choose a different path. We can choose a better path forward to the future, a future of possibility, a future to build and dream and hope. And we're on that path moving ahead. I know this nation. I know you, the American people. I know your courage. I know your hearts. And I know our history. This is a nation that honors our Constitution. We do not reject it. This is a nation that believes in the rule of law. We do not repudiate it. This is a nation that respects free and fair elections. We honor the will of the people. We do not deny it. And this is a nation that rejects violence as a political tool. We do not encourage violence. We are still an America that believes in honesty and decency and respect for others. Patriotism, liberty, justice for all, hope, possibilities. We are still, at our core, a democracy. And yet, history tells us that blind loyalty to a single leader and a willingness to engage in political violence is fatal to democracy. For a long time, we've told ourselves that American democracy is guaranteed, but it's not. We have to defend it, protect it, stand up for it, each and every one of us. That's why tonight I'm asking our nation to come together, unite behind the single purpose of defending our democracy regardless of your ideology. We're all called by duty and conscience to confront extremists who put their own pursuit of power above all else. Democrats, independents, mainstream Republicans, we must be stronger, more determined, and more committed to saving American democracy than MAGA Republicans are to destroying American democracy. We, the people, will not let anyone or anything tear us apart. Today, there are dangers around us we cannot allow to prevail. We hear, you've heard it, more and more talk about violence as an acceptable political tool in this country. It's not. It can never be an acceptable tool. So I want to say this plain and simple. There is no place for political violence in America, period. None, ever. You saw law enforcement brutally attacked on January 6th. We've seen election officials, poll workers, many of them volunteers of both parties, subject to intimidation and death threats. And can you believe it? FBI agents just doing their job as directed, facing threats to their own lives from their own fellow citizens. On top of that, there are public figures today, yesterday, and the day before predicting and all but calling for mass violence and rioting in the streets.
This speech was a very dangerous speech, and Mike Huckabee, a former governor of the state of Arkansas, was interviewed, and here's what he had to say about it. He thought it was a very dark speech, the way it was set up with Marines there, and it was red, lit with red and dark black and so forth. So this is what Mike Huckabee, former governor of Arkansas, had to say about his impressions and his opinions of that speech Thursday night. Here we go with Mike Huckabee.
For more, let's bring in former Republican Arkansas governor and former presidential candidate Mike Huckabee. Mike, you just heard what I think about it. What did you think about last night?
The whole speech was dark. The words were dark. The setting was dark. I really looked at it and I thought, my gosh, who wrote this and came up with the venue? Satan? It was just that kind of speech, David, that was frankly kind of blood-curdling. I've never seen a U.S. president in all my life, and I go back to Eisenhower in terms of remembering presidents. I've never seen a president use the presidential seal and the authority of the office to give such a just incredibly divisive speech and accuse 74 million Americans, half the country, of being evil. Not just saying, you guys disagree, your ideas aren't as good as mine, but to say we're enemies of democracy, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. The image of those Marines standing there at attention through all of that was, to use a word from Hillary, it was deplorable.
You know, I am from a Marine family. My son's been in a couple of wars fighting for the Marines. I mean, I know Marines pretty well, and I happen to know for a fact that a lot of them don't have a respect for this administration. And I even, those poor guys that were forced to stand there, because that is their duty to honor the commander-in-chief the way they did, but to realize that what they were doing was being used to back up with force these ideas of calling out half of America as traitors.
This speech was a despicable, dark speech. It attacked a group of people unwarrantedly and with no credit and no real facts behind the attack. But what is more dangerous than this is that as more and more censorship took place of alternative press people off of all of the networks that were social networks, then the single voice of which President Biden exemplified became more and more prominent and more influential within those that started believing this and coming together against those objects of divisiveness and that they could see as the real problem. So what he's done is that the problems of the country are now focused in on the MAGA Trump people as being the real problem, and this becomes a really, really dangerous situation. Matthias Desmet wrote a book a while back called The Psychology of Totalitarianism. In there, he put forward a theory that he states as mass formation. Now, in this mass formation theory that he has, it's not anything new. It's a new term that he has put together to better explain what is going on in America. And he'll explain in a clip coming up after I give this little explanation here of what occurred when he started looking at COVID-19. It was over-exaggerated and so forth. And so this was this voice putting and seeding fear into the public at large worldwide. And he's saying these are the mechanisms that form a mass formation of a collective body of people that begin to believe, and then they'll direct that hate and resentment and that force and energy, that dark force, against this object of their hatred or this object that they believe is the source of their failures and shortcomings and problems. So what he says in his theory is that there are four things that need to take place before a group can come together. Number one, generalized longings, loneliness, he says, generalized loneliness. Number two, lack of meaning in life. Number three, free-floating anxiety and psychological, in a population, unease, psychological unease in a population. And then the fourth thing he says is free-floating frustration and aggression. And he says this, he goes on and says, a society is saturated with individualism and rationalism, suddenly turns towards a radically opposite condition, towards radically irrational collectivism. And that's what happened under the COVID-19. Those that didn't take the shots, they were the enemy all of a sudden. And this collectiveness of people that took the shots and were here listening to this voice of what to do and how to do it and so forth, then they collectively came together in a mass formation type of situation and directed their hatred and so forth against. Now, they talk about the story. The masses believe in the story, and we're talking about the collective, COVID-19. Not because it's accurate, because it creates a new social bond. He's saying that out of this loneliness and lack of meaning in one's life, then this COVID-19 and this new mission that comes to, oh, we got to go after those non-vaccinated people. They're the cause of all of our problems, see? And those other dissenting voices about not to take vaccines, anti-vaccine people, they're the real cause of our problems. And so these are some of the things that have been taking place and that are dangerous and that are not only totalitarian in nature and description, but very fascist related. And so coming up next is a interview that Alex had with Matthias Desmond. And he explains a little bit more about his theory of mass formation. And then I'm going to put a click off up on my page, The Seek. So go to thesecrettruth.com and you'll be able to see a much longer interview that he had out on the beach that's on Rumble. But also you'll be able to get, I'll put his site up where you go to his site and so forth and get, read more of his statements and view more of the videos that are out there to get a little bit better idea of this thing that he put forward as mass formation. So here we go with Matthias Desmond, interviewed by Alex.
The mass formations became stronger and stronger and stronger throughout the last few hundreds of years. And that's interesting because it's because in the first half of the 20th century, the masses became so strong that led by certain leaders, they could seize control of the state apparatus. And that's how totalitarian states emerge.
Yes.
Totalitarian states, Hannah Arendt says, are always a diabolic pact between the masses and their leaders. It's a diabolic pact between the masses and their leaders, and in this way, like a completely new kind of state emerges, which is completely different from a classical dictatorship. In a classical dictatorship, there is a small group of people, a dictatorial regime, who has such an aggressive potential that people are so scared of them that they can impose unilaterally their social contract to society.
Yes.
But the totalitarian state emerges in a completely different way. In a totalitarian state, there is first a process of mass formation, which is a process through which a certain part of the population, usually about 30%, fanatically starts to believe in a certain ideology. And this phenomenon can be created artificially through indoctrination propaganda.
And just pause. You think that number can be as low as 30%?
Yes, usually it is not higher than 30%.
All right, Professor Matthias Desmond is in studio with us for the next hour plus. He is recognized as the world's leading expert on the theory of mass formation, psychology, and psychosis as it applies to COVID-19 pandemic. He's a professor of clinical psychology, Department of Psychology and Educational Sciences at Ghent, as I said, University of Belgium, and a practicing psychologist. He has worked in discussing widely in the media, and he's here with us. Of course, he's well-known for the Joe Rogan show as well. You wanted to get right into Biden's speech, Professor, and just how archetypal it is with it nighttime with troops behind him with red light. I mean, it's right out of V for Vendetta. It's right out of Nazi Germany. It's right out of Stalinist Russia. It's right out of North Korea. And saying our enemies are going to be bad and we've got to have a war with them. What did you make of that? And it's great to have you here with us.
Yes, well, this speech definitely puts us at risk of something. And it is that it entices the people who are targeted, namely those people who are referred to by President Biden as a MAGA extremist, that it entices these people to act upon their aggression. And that's what should be avoided at all times, because it will be counterproductive and self-destructive if people act upon their aggression. Because the system can perfectly control aggression. I believe that it is of crucial importance that we stick to the principles of non-violent resistance, and that we realize that the first and foremost enemy we have to watch is that part of the enemy that is in ourselves, namely this aggression that might entice us to act in a violent way, that might entice us to believe that violent resistance is the solution to this problem, and it won't be in several respects.
Well, I read your book almost a year ago online when you were on Joe Rogan, thought it was excellent. I'm not trained in psychology, but I can just see the basic things, obviously, in function. The book's a bestseller, The Psychology of Totalitarianism, Professor Desmond, here in studio with us right now in Austin, Texas, on the September 2nd broadcast. I liken this to the Matador speech or the bullfight speech, where they have the red cape, the red light, the nighttime, the troops, and we're coming for you, we're going to get you, hoping the bull charges and they've got the sword ready.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. That's the impression that is raised by this speech. And that's exactly what we should not react upon. We should watch out and stay calm, I believe. It's a grave mistake of President Biden to give a speech like that. He should lead by example as a political leader, and that's exactly what he doesn't. He fans the polarization in society, and probably because he knows that if people react in a violent way, it will be a gift to the system, because that is exactly what the system can perfectly control.
To give a nighttime speech with troops behind you with red light projected, and then to declare your political opposition enemies, I mean, this is the thoroughbred to me to studying history of authoritarianism.
Yes, indeed. Indeed, also in my interpretation of totalitarianism, as I describe it in my book, Totalitarianism, and I use the words of Hannah Arendt there, totalitarianism is always a diabolic pact between the masses and the elite. And what we've seen throughout the last decades, and in particular in the corona crisis, is that we've seen this part of the population, which forms a new kind of group, a mass, and which becomes more and more and more intolerant for dissonant voices, and which tends to stigmatize these people who do not go along with the system, to excommunicate them, to push them outside of society, and in the end, to commit atrocities to them. We are not in that final stage, in that ultimate stage of the mass formation, but we are at risk of getting to that stage.
And you coined the term mass formation, or other similar terms, but I see it as mob rule, mob psychology, militant enthusiasm, mass formation psychology. What is that?
What is mass formation? Mass formation is actually a kind of group formation, a specific kind of group formation.
Now, what's the actual term, Mike?
It's mass formation is the actual term. Yes, yeah. Mass formation is the actual term. It's sometimes referred to as mass formation psychosis, but I always avoid that term, simply because I believe that it's better not to use a psychiatric term, both from an intellectual, a strategical, and an ethical point of view.
But it's a mass psychosis.
No, it's, for me, it's a mass formation. Psychosis is a term that is borrowed from individual psychiatry, and I refuse to use that term for group psychology, but many people... It shows similarities with a psychotic state, simply because it makes people completely incapable of taking a critical distance of what the group believes in. It makes that they are completely willing to radically self-sacrifice, to sacrifice everything that used to be important for them before the group dynamic emerged.
Give up their energy, give up their freedom, give up their cars, give up their children.
The health of the child, yes, yes. Stuff like that, to give up everything. And then the third characteristic is always what I just mentioned already, that that mass formation makes people radically intolerant for dissonant voices, and in the end will make that the masses start to destroy the people who do not go along with them as if it is their ethical duty to do so. I will give a strong example. In the revolution of 1979 in Iran, which was a large-scale mass formation, a woman I know has seen with her own eyes how a mother reported her son to the state and how she hung the rope around his neck when he was on the scaffold and how she claimed to be a heroine for what she did when he was hung. That's the end stage, the ultimate stage of mass formation. That's what we should avoid.
That sounds like Stockholm Syndrome.
That's similar to the Stockholm Syndrome, yes. And I think that if you understand the mechanism of mass formation, and that's why I thought it was so important to write my book, if you understand the mechanism of mass formation, you will understand what you have to do in order to prevent the masses to go to that ultimate stage where they will definitely destroy you. It's what matters is to make the right strategical decision. The right strategical decision when confronted with an emerging mass.
Well, I know this. When you were on Joe Rogan a year and a half ago or whenever it was, and then it got picked up by all these other scientists, they got really scared of what you said. I mean, they are, because obviously they're using it, and they're like, oh, they find this out, it's over for us.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are scared of that theory, yes. They're scared of that theory because it explains, I think, it explains in detail.
All right, well, Professor, I'm going to try to do this. You're with us for another hour. I'm going to try to just shut up and let you talk and explain all this to people because this is so important. Dr. Matthias Desmond, author of The Psychology of Totalitarianism, is our guest, and it was Dr. Peter McCullough on Joe Rogan popularized the term. And what's funny how the planets align, he was flying here today to be on the next hour, but storm stopped him being here. You guys would have met, but he'll actually be here tomorrow. So if you're still around, you're welcome to come down here and be on with him. But what's important is you're exposing what I would call mob psychology or the insanity of, you know, crowds and how authoritarians team up with that and manipulate that. That's my layman's terms for it. And clearly they're invoking that now with the White House press secretary and President Biden saying anybody disagrees with us is a fascist, is a semi-fascist, is an enemy. So I could ask a lot of questions, but just rolling through this, the contemporary examples of this mind control these people are under, and how do we get them out of it? And you keep speaking to how we protect ourselves from it.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Yes. Well, I started to articulate this theory on mass formation during the corona crisis because I noticed in the beginning of the crisis, I'm a clinical psychologist, but I'm also a statistician. I have also a master in statistics, and I started to study the statistics a little bit, and I noticed immediately that the statistics dramatically overrated the dangerousness of the virus. And at least that was my strong impression in the first weeks of the crisis, and I immediately started to write opinion papers to warn the people that there was something dangerous out there and that I was not talking about a virus, that I was talking about the fear for the virus. The title of my first opinion paper was The Fear of the Virus is More Dangerous Than the Virus Itself. And by the end of May 2020, according to me, it was proven beyond a shade of a doubt that indeed the initial models dramatically overrated the mortality rates of the virus, for instance. As, for instance, the models predicted that in Sweden 60,000 people would die if the country didn't go into lockdown by the end of May 2020. And Sweden didn't go into lockdown, and only 6,000 people died. And to arrive at that figure, they had even to count in a very enthusiastic way, or otherwise probably only 1,000 of 2,000 people would have died. So at that moment, I noticed two things. It was clear that the mathematical models on which the corona measures were based were blatantly wrong. And still, the narrative continued, and people continued to buy into it as if the models had been correct. And I also noticed that no matter how much you try to show people that the statistics were wrong, it seemed as if they just didn't care. And at that moment, I decided to focus on something else. I decided to focus on the psychological dynamics that were going on in society. And in my opinion, it started to dawn on me that what we were dealing with was a large-scale process of mass formation in society. Mass formation, which is a specific group dynamic, and as I said a few minutes ago, a specific group dynamic which makes people radically incapable of taking a critical distance of what they believe in, which makes people radically willing to self-sacrifice, and which makes people radically intolerant for dissonant voices. And this specific group dynamic, this masses or this crowd, exists as long as mankind has existed. We have had crusades, we've had witch hunts, we've had the French Revolution, the emergence of the large-scale masses of the Soviet Union, the emergence of the large-scale masses of the of Nazi Germany. So it has existed as long as mankind existed, but, and that's crucial, it became stronger and stronger and stronger throughout the last few hundreds of centuries. And that was as a consequence of the emergence of the so-called mechanist, rationalist fuel men in the world, which went together with excessive industrialization and mechanization of the world, and with an extreme use of technology after a while.
So it's a centralization allows this mind control.
The centralization allows the mind control, but also, and more important in the first place, is that it puts people in a specific psychological condition which makes them vulnerable for the indoctrination propaganda. So
does it make them suggestible, or do they just totally turn themselves over?
It makes them, in the first... The first step is always that this kind of mechanist view on man and the world disconnects people from their social and their natural environment. It makes them feel lonely. And
lock you in your house.
Yes, for instance, but it happens.
But clearly done consciously then. This is all, yeah.
It happens both unconsciously and consciously.
I mean, those programming it are conscious of it.
The programming is conscious, but it also, like, this you can see that throughout the last few hundred of centuries, the number of people that felt lonely started to increase and increase and increase. And just before the corona crisis, it reached a peak. Over 40% of the population worldwide claimed to feel disconnected, reported to have no meaningful relationships at all.
But don't worry, now the metaverse is here. So right as this comes in, the metaverse is rolled out.
Yes. That's what I describe in my third chapter, that technological connection is not at all the same as a real connection, an in-person connection. It's completely different from a psychological point of view. It's exactly this use of technology which really disconnects people, which makes that their bodies do not resonate with each other anymore, which makes them completely disconnected from each other, except at the level of the exchange of information, which is important, but which is not the same. It's this disconnected state that makes them vulnerable for mass formation, because this disconnection, in the first instance, leads to lack of meaning making. People are start to be confronted with experiences of lack of meaning making in life, and then in a third step, it makes them experience so-called free-floating anxiety, frustration, and aggression. Meaning a kind of anxiety, frustration, and aggression.
This is eye-opening and life-changing information. And we're still on the internet now. And so come in and you'll see these videos that I've embedded in this site for this presentation, September 3rd, 2022 presentation here on thesecrettruth.com. Come in, spread it all over, going to Alex's site and other sites. There's Rumble sites that Matthias Desmond has. And spread the word about this mass formation and what's happening in this country. We cannot let them totally extinguish our voices about our counter alternative news. And that's what they've been good at doing. And then you only have a few voices that are government oriented. And then you have presidents like Biden that gets up and puts forth a very dark and sinister and very, very violent prone type of speech that can set people into motion in negative dynamics. So that's what I think. Now coming up is Dr. McCullough. Today was interviewed, and he flew in from outside and was interviewed by Alex again. Another clip from Alex, and it's just he talks about he discredits and talks about the real vaccines and these CDC and Walensky and all this stuff in a very, very forthright manner. So here we go with Dr. McCullough and Alex.
Well, August was a busy month for news. There's no doubt about it. Rochelle Walensky, our CDC director, came out and said the CDC made large mistakes and they needed to own these mistakes. I was called on the news. I was on Fox, multiple stations. They said, well, what mistakes did they make? And it was clear that the advice from the CDC was erratic. It was inconsistent, but yet it was dictatorial. And we know this because when we got to the point of wearing masks on airplanes, it took a federal judge in Florida to basically rule that the CDC can't tell Americans to wear masks on airplanes and have that have any traction. My opinion is that the CDC should have never given any advice or guidance on contagion control. Contagion control is in the realm of doctors and others who look after patients. There was no evidence to support public masking or hand sanitizers or social distancing, none of it. And the CDC never should have given guidance advice on emergency use authorized vaccines. The CDC establishes the general childhood vaccine schedule, but they were way out of their league in both of these endeavors. And boy, what a disaster it was for America. Within just a few days of all of this, the CDC came out with its new guidance, basically catching up to what our current understanding was. Recently on a podcast, one of the podcasters went over one of my standard lectures called The Five COVID Truths and lined up the most recent CDC guidance to this, which was astonishing. Basically, the five COVID truths is that, you know, fundamentally with respect to testing and nasal carriage of the virus, there is no difference between a fully vaccinated and an unvaccinated individual. They're indistinguishable from one another. They carry the virus at the same viral loads. They're equally as contagious. They get the infection with kind of an equal proclivity. And so we have a situation now where there is absolutely no scientific support for any form of mandate on someone taking a vaccine or a booster.
I see these headlines out of the British Medical Journal and others that are just shocking now, where headlines like 9 out of 10 people that die with COVID are double or triple vaxxed. And we see, as you mentioned, the CDC head saying, oh, sorry, we got it wrong. Or we see Burke saying, oh, we knew it wasn't going to work. And then we see all these other statements. It looks like they're trying to get ahead of more data they know is coming out.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. Two papers in 2021, one by lead author Wheatley, had in the title immune imprinting. What this means is that the vaccines were given every 6 months, exposing the body to the same exact obsolete antigen, the Wuhan spike protein. This turned out to be an immunologic disaster. What happened was the body's immune system was trained in on a high exposure of this antigen in critical organs and tissues, and it was misdirected. So when the infection actually happened, when the frail and vulnerable, there were higher rates of hospitalization and death in the fully vaccinated. Now in Ontario, they have data, you know, 9 out of 10 people who are dying of COVID-19 are fully vaccinated. There were basically three false claims of the vaccine program. The first false claim was the vaccine stopped the infection. If you took the vaccine, you couldn't get it. That quickly eroded thousands of breakthrough cases reported through 2021. The CDC gave up on this in May of 2021, where they basically said, we're not going to follow breakthroughs. There's too many of them. The second false claim was that the vaccines basically blocked transmission. And our Walensky had to come out in the summer of 2021 and say, listen, they don't stop transmission. People fully vaccinated give it to one another. It was happening during weddings, cruise boats, naval ships. And then the last false claim was this, Alex. The false claim was, well, if you take the vaccine, there's a consolation prize and that you will have a milder case or you won't be hospitalized or die. And there was even ridiculous memes on the Internet. One of them was a guy who gets COVID and he dies. And he said, thank goodness I had a vaccine. It could have been better.
It could have been worse.
Yeah. I mean, it could have been worse. Right. So the idea is that the vaccines never reduced hospitalization and death. There never was a prospective randomized trial with hospitalization and death as a primary endpoint where that was reduced by the vaccines. The only two interventions that reduce hospitalization and death are having the illness beforehand, natural immunity, and then early treatment. So there was a series of fraudulent studies that didn't account for natural immunity and early treatment, claiming that the vaccinated had lower rates of hospitalization and death. I can tell you in my practice, if I have somebody who's fully vaccinated, They are the most fearful of COVID-19. They're the first ones to get early treatment, the first ones. And so without accounting for those variables, we had a whole series of fraudulent papers claiming that the fully vaccinated had lower rates of hospitalization and death. And then, as you pointed out, the data poured in from Canada, the UK, Israel, Europe, South Africa, and Australia, clearly showing when they account for who's been fully vaccinated, that indeed the fully vaccinated are doing far worse with COVID-19 than those who are unvaccinated.
Wow. So you talk about, obviously, we'll talk about this later, they admit it's a PSYOP. I have them admitting it's a PSYOP. But what is it a PSYOP for? And how do you think Pfizer and Moderna and the system is going to extricate itself from this now that we see the reports that there's almost universal rejection now of the previous shots and now this new so-called booster they're rolling out with no human trials? How would you, in layman terms, when you're on Fox for, you know, three-minute hit, how would you quantify this for people that aren't, a research, doctor and medical doctor like yourself, of really how big this is? Because we're sitting back with them admitting you're 90% of those dying are triple vaxxed or whatever all over the Western world. I mean, that is just sensational and horrifying. So, I mean, how would you describe this medical disaster?
This is such a complex reality. It's mind-boggling. You know, through August, the other bombshell was that National Allergy Immunology Infectious Disease Branch director, a division director, Anthony Fauci, who ascended to much higher levels of power than his NIH position ever granted him, announced his retirement, or he's stepping down. Alex, I looked at his announcement on the NIH website. I was astonished to find in his kind of self-congratulatory departure notice, no mention of COVID-19. No mention of COVID-19. His signature program, there's no mention of it. I said this when I went on with Sebastian Gorka this week. Gorka nearly fell out of his chair. He goes, what? This guy, this was his Super Bowl of his career. There's no mention of it. And now we have the COVID-19 bivalent boosters coming in, and these really deserve explanation. This week, the U.S. FDA, with no human data, relying only on the manufacturers giving animal data or rodent data, showing an antibody rise in a mouse model of antibodies against a common segment of the BA4, BA5 spike protein, the FDA inexplicably approved this. Do you know the investigational new drug application for Pfizer was just filed on August 22nd? I mean, they had...
So there's no review. They're just green-lighting everything.
Well, this is unprecedented that they had plenty of time to do large randomized trials. We've been in the midst of this BA4, BA5 secondary wave for months now. They have plenty of time to do randomized trials. They have tons of money.
But they don't want the trials because they know the previous shots are killing people.
Well, here's the thing. The very first sets of trials now have been critically analyzed by Peter Doshi at University of Maryland and Joseph Freeman down in Louisiana at LSU. And their conclusion in a peer-reviewed paper is even from the original trials, when we actually get all the safety data and the efficacy data, the vaccines did more harm than good in the original randomized trials. Then it plays out into the public space. We know under court order, Pfizer had to release its dossier. The judge, the lawyer for the FDA, tried to block this to Americans for 55 years. What was in that dossier is that Pfizer knew about 1,223 deaths within 90 days of release of their vaccine.
Wow.
Unprecedented. This is prima facie evidence that the FDA is involved in a safety cover-up for Pfizer. Recently, the Moderna documents...
And prima facie, for those that don't know, means on his face.
That's on his face. When the FDA says, we want to block this information, families were calling Pfizer saying, my loved one just died with your vaccine. Pfizer was dutifully recording all these deaths. They had hired hundreds of employees to man the phones as these deaths poured in. It's astonishing that Pfizer didn't shut it down after a handful of deaths, or at least 50 deaths. I've chaired days.
I mean, they clearly knew. So let me just, as a layperson, let me ask you this. Why, if they know it's killing people and not working, are they doubling down with this super booster? Is this all just a test to see what they can get away with? This is crazy.
This is clearly a test to see what they can get away with. If the FDA is going to shield them from any public outrage, and it's interesting, Albert Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer, is going on the liberal media and, you know, advising Americans to take more of the conventional boosters and now the bivalent boosters. No one's ever asked him a question. You have 1,223 deaths within 90 days on your books. What are you doing about that? It should have been shut down.
And then they try to suppress it, showing the premeditated nature of it.
Well, it's true. And I can tell you, their breakthrough was the World Council for Health, which has put out a whole variety of cautionary warnings over the last 2 years. They came out on June 11th, Alex, and they said after a pharmacovigilance report, they looked at VAERS. They looked at the yellow card system in the UK, the UDRA system in the EU, and the WHO VigiSafe. There's over 40,000 certified deaths that's happened within a few days of taking these shots. Millions of serious safety reports. World Council for Health says pull them off the market. They're unsafe for human use. This is very important. This is a worldwide body. They represent 70 individual organizations across the world. World Council for Health.
The prestigious, respected group says pull it.
Pull it.
Well, they need to pull it then, and that's good advice by Alex and Dr. McCullough. Coming up is Stephen Miller's opinion. We're going to close our program with his opinion on what happened, what he thinks about this speech that President Biden gave this last Thursday night. So here we go with Stephen Miller's opinion on that.
For more on this, let's bring in Stephen Miller, former White House senior policy advisor and founder of America First Legal. Stephen, first, I want to get your take on the speech. What was your takeaway?
Well, it was the most despicable speech from an American president, not only in memory, but that I'm aware of in the history of our country. I mean, maybe some historian can look through all the speeches every president has ever given going back a couple centuries, but I'm not aware of any speech delivered by an American president that was so uniquely focused on demonizing and disparaging, vilifying, really, tens of millions of his own citizens whom he is duty-bound to serve and represent.
Yeah.
Remember, the phrase that he used over and over again in the speech was MAGA Republicans. In other words, American citizens who believe in the agenda of Make America Great Again, which includes and is not limited to secure borders, fair trade, election integrity, protecting unborn life, traditional values, Judeo-Christian heritage, patriotic education in our schools, free speech online. I could go on and on.
Right.
But in effect saying anyone who believes in these things is an enemy of the country and is a stain on its soul. I've never heard such dehumanizing rhetoric directed at the citizens, the voters, the law-abiding citizens of this country who simply go to work every day, pay their taxes, and want a better future for their children.
I mean, I think the big distinction, though, Stephen, is, I mean, because I was in politics for a long time. I was in the Congress. Political speeches can get pretty heated, right? The rhetoric can be tough. But the difference here was this was an official speech, billed on official time from the White House, not from the DNC. Take a listen to more of Biden's attacks on the GOP last night.
Tonight, equality and democracy are under assault. MAGA forces are determined to take this country backwards. They promote authoritarian leaders and they fan the flames of political violence that are a threat to our personal rights. MAGA Republicans have made their choice. They embrace anger. They thrive on chaos. They live not in the light of truth, but in the shadow of lies. And MAGA Republicans are to destroying American democracy.
You know, Stephen, in close elections, you want to win independence. You want to win the persuadables. Does this record and rhetoric that he has last night, is that going to backfire him on the next election?
Well, it is enormously. But I also want to address a point that you made about political rhetoric versus official rhetoric. The president committed two enormous sins. The first, obviously, is using official government resources, using, I think more shockingly, United States Marines for a purely political speech about voting. But secondly, and much more perniciously, is that, again, he wasn't saying, I, Joe Biden, don't like this office holder, or I, Joe Biden, don't like what these people in Congress are voting on. He was attacking people who believe in the things that I just ticked through. For example, pro-life Americans. And he's demonizing these people as less than, as others, as not worthy of participation in our democracy. That is authoritarian rhetoric. I mean, it will backfire monstrously. But just beyond that, the damage that it's doing to our country, the damage that it's doing to civility. You talk about damaging norms in this country. He took a giant mountain of TNT and just blew up every norm we have in American politics by going after voters themselves.
You know, I find it interesting. We all knew that this speech was going to be political in nature. The soul of America is at stake. I mean, that the Pentagon would have actually signed off on putting Marines as a backdrop to this political speech is actually shocking to me. I mean, I would think that the Pentagon would have said, you know what, this is probably not the best place for us to be, even though it's an official speech. It seems like it's going to be political. Maybe we don't want Marines to participate in this political speech and this attack on Republicans.
Well, it was the most nakedly political, brute, barbaric speech, again, that any of us have ever heard. I don't know why Milley hasn't resigned. Milley, as you remember, General Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, nearly resigned, was up in arms, publicly apologized, because he was upset that Donald Trump called in the National Guard to stop BLM Marxist violent rioters from ransacking our nation's capital. That apparently upset General Milley for reasons that are only understood inside his own brain, and he threatened to resign over that. Now you have the United States Marine Corps, people who have fought and won our battles for generations, being used as props by Joe Biden, again, for the sole purpose of trying to dehumanize every American that supports the Make America Great Again agenda. How is Milley not tendered his resignation? Where is his public statement? I don't know.
No, I completely agree with you. And what I find fascinating is the president says that MAGA Republicans are trying to take the country backwards. I would say that is kind of the point. People do want to go back to the Trump era where everyone had jobs, everyone's wages were rising, the border was secure, our military was strong, we had less crime in America. The Trump years were pretty darn good. Going back to the Trump era from, you know, what we have now with record high inflation, unemployment, high crime, open borders, it seems like it's a pretty good era to go back to, Stephen.
Yes, people want to go back all of 2 years to a time when the world was at peace, when we had less war, not more war, when the economy was on the rise, not tumbling into recession, when we didn't have inflation, when energy was incredibly affordable, when our borders were incredibly secure and our cities were incredibly safe. Yes, they would like to go back to that and like to hold fast to the timeless and eternal values going back to our founding fathers that have always been the source of American greatness.
Newt Gingrich closing it out. Here we go with Newt Gingrich.
Thank you, Newt Gingrich, now Fox News political analyst and a former House Speaker. Great to see you, Speaker. Thank you very much for joining us. Do you agree with this move by the Texas governor to continue to send these bus loads of migrants now to cities like Chicago as well?
Well, I think Governor Abbott represents the desperation that you get along the border states. I mean, whether it's Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, to some extent California, the sheer number of illegal immigrants pouring in, well over 2 million so far in the Biden administration. And if you count the ones that they're not catching, maybe as much as 3 million people have poured in. And some of them are dangerous. We were just told, I think yesterday, that three illegal immigrants apparently are being charged with killing a deputy sheriff in North Carolina. So I think what Abbott's done is pretty clever. He's saying to all of these northern liberal states, you know, you want to be a sanctuary city. You know, let me ship you a whole bunch of folks so you can practice being a sanctuary. And I think that the liberal mayors all of a sudden find themselves faced with, you know, the realization that the problem on the border can't just be a Texas problem. It is an American problem. And I think Governor Abbott's right to try to communicate that to the whole country.
And it is also an American problem now to deal with this massive amount of drugs that are flowing over the border. And now there are more massive drug seizures that we are seeing happen at the border, Speaker. Agents found nearly $12 million worth of cocaine in a shipment labeled baby wipes near Laredo, Texas. That's nearly 2,000 packages of the drug, the biggest cocaine bust in 20 years. It comes after a warning about rainbow fentanyl coming over the border. The White House was pressed on that yesterday.
A big problem now that rainbow fentanyl, what specifically is the president doing about this?
We just talked about the day, the overdose awareness day that that we are observing today.
So again, Americans' life expectancies are going down at a rate not seen in a century, and part of that is being driven by drug overdoses.
We see those same numbers as well, but the fact that we're we are securing the border, the fact that we are securing record levels of funding from DHS so they can stop illicit drugs from entering into the country.
It's not being stopped. 300 overdoses.
I hear you. I just laid out 200% of increase of drug fentanyl seizures.
Fentanyl's coming in. People are dying.
This is something that's incredibly important to this president. So to say that we're not doing enough, Peter, is just falsely, categorically wrong. If Republicans want to help us stop overdose and stop our kids getting overdosed because of these dangerous drugs, because of these fentanyl that we're seeing in the streets, we're happy to work with them, but they're not.
So is the goal to blame Republicans for the drugs flowing over our southern border?
Look, the level of dishonesty in that interview is astonishing. The fact that they could suggest that they're controlling the border, you just saw footage of how uncontrolled the border is. And this is an administration which every single day lies to the American people. And I think we also have to recognize something which neither party has taken on as much as they're going to have to, and that is that in many ways Mexico is becoming a failed state. The cartels have enormous power in Mexico, and as long as the cartels are as powerful as they are, I think they're a real danger to the United States, not just from drugs, but presently they're going to start exerting the same kind of violence here that they routinely exert in Mexico. And I think that's something people need to really think about. We've had a long period of assuming our southern border was safe. Now it's not only open, but our next-door neighbor is increasingly dominated by very violent organizations that are, I think, ultimately going to also seep into the United States and who get most of their money, frankly, from sales in the United States.
Cocaine marked as baby wipes, fentanyl looking like children's candy. It is a scary, scary time watching all those drugs flow over the border. We appreciate you joining us, Newt Gingrich. Thank you very much.
I want to thank everyone out there for listening. We're just continually trying to put together something that makes sense. And this, the psychology of totalitarianism with Matias Desmet. And we're taking the best clips that we can find from the best programs that we can find. And this is getting serious. This country is in the throes of a transformation from a much more democratic republic into a totalitarian, fascist, dominated country with fewer and fewer voices and more censorship and less freedom and liberty. And Ron Paul and Rand Paul and all these other people have been working feverishly to bring us what's right in this country. And I want to thank each and every one of you tonight for listening to this program. Good night. Good luck. God bless you.